I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer vital health questions that will help you thrive, like, what does my mental health have to do with my gut? How can I prevent melanoma? How much sleep do I really need? And how can I manage my health without a family doctor? I chat with the top experts to bring you the latest evidence in plain language, all in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Ian Hannah-Mansing. Welcome to Checkup's Ask Me Anything podcast. And today you're about to hear our AMA about Haiti with Canadian Ambassador to the United Nations, Bob Ray.
Haiti is currently in the grips of a violent political crisis.
The UN now says 15,000 people have been displaced over just the past week.
Canadians in Haiti are being told to shelter in place.
Canada has reduced its staff at the embassy in Haiti to essential personnel due to the ongoing violence in that country. A coalition of gangs is believed to control about 80% of Haiti's capital city. And on Monday, the unelected Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, announced his resignation. As the country descends into chaos, Canada, the U.S., and others are backing the creation of a transitional presidential council. And that's not all. A foreign multinational force is also in the works to help Haitian police control the gangs. Canada is contributing $80.5 million to that force, though it's not sending peacekeepers to Haiti as it has in the past. Meanwhile, Global Affairs Canada reports there are nearly 3,000 Canadians trapped in Haiti. Our AMA guest is Bob Ray, Canada's ambassador to the United Nations. Bob Ray answered questions about Haiti. Here are a few highlights from the show. Ambassador, thanks for joining us.
Nice to be with you, Ian. Thank you.
So I mentioned in our introduction, the federal government is sending money to support a multinational force, but not sending troops to Haiti. You are, as I mentioned, the government's ambassador to the United Nations. So perhaps I can ask you, why is Canada not sending peacekeepers to Haiti as it's done in the past?
Well, because we want to learn some lessons from what happened before. And so we've been focusing all of our efforts over the last number of years, and we've really intensified those efforts to train up the Haitian National Police as much as we can, to coordinate the efforts that are being made by a number of countries to provide some extra help to the HNP, the police force, and also to do a lot more on the development side. So, I mean, in addition to the $80 million, which we're putting into the trust fund for the peacekeeping mission, we've contributed more than $300 million in the last couple of years, not only to support security, but also to support development and humanitarian issues in Haiti. We have an incredible team that's working with the police. I've had the opportunity of meeting with them on a number of occasions in the last couple of years. They're doing great work. We just want to strengthen the institutions of Haiti, and we think that's the best role that we can play, and the most constructive role we can play, because we're going to be there for the really long term with the Haitians. I think a number of other countries have agreed to, you know, send in extra police, and we'll see exactly what the nature of the force is in the next few weeks. But I think it's Canada's role is one that makes sense for us. And I think, frankly, it makes sense to the Haitians. I think they're very glad that we're doing what we're doing, and that we've indicated that we've been there for a long time in assisting the Haitian government to do its job. And we will be there for a long time.
Before I get to the phone lines, Ambassador Ray, I want to ask you another question, and that is about the 3,000 Canadians, registered Canadians, who are in Haiti right now. Canada's issued a warning to them to shelter in place. The U.S. State Department announced Saturday it's sending a charter flight to bring some of its citizens in Haiti to the United States. Does Canada have a plan to evacuate any citizens who are stranded in Haiti?
We're looking at what else we can do. I mean, we're not looking in a casual way. We don't actually have ways of getting access to the airports right now. Americans have been able to fly into one airport, which is in the north of the country, in a place called Cap Haïtien. I think the government is considering what more it can do and very actively looking at the situation. I actually think the number 3,000 is probably conservative because there are a great many people who live in a country that don't necessarily contact the embassy and say, we're Canadian citizens and we're here. There are many dual citizens, Haitian and Canadian, who go back and forth and have family in Canada as well as in Haiti. So we're trying to get a sense of what the numbers are and where they are and what the risk is. There are some parts of Haiti that are much less risky than Port-au-Prince, and it is possible for people to be pretty safe if they're careful. But there are other places where it's much riskier, and so we're looking at what else we can do.
You know, qualitatively, I can see a difference between somebody who is a Canadian citizen who is temporarily in Haiti, maybe working with an aid agency or otherwise there on short term, as opposed to somebody who's a long-term resident of Haiti and perhaps a dual citizen. So I can see a distinction there. I wonder for the government of Canada if it could ever look at an evacuation and draw distinctions like that, or is it as long as you have a Canadian passport and we're starting to evacuate, you are eligible?
Well, I mean, when we look at other crises around the world, Canada has tended to take the position that a Canadian is a Canadian. And so we understand what the needs are, and we're looking hard at what we can do in a way that's going to be the most effective. We're also trying to do everything we can to get a handle on the crisis, on the closure of the airports and the continuing harassment at the ports, not harassment against Canadians or anybody, but just harassment by looters who are part of gangs who are raiding, UNICEF packages and other donations, which we're trying to get into the country. So there's a lot of things we have to do at once, and we're trying to do as many of them as we possibly can.
Let's go to the phone lines now because we're getting lots of calls. Peter Seelig is in Peace River, Alberta. Hi, Peter.
Hello, Mr. Hanamansing.
You can call me Ian, but you should probably...
No.
Okay. What's your question for Bob Ray?
Well, I have two things. One is, Ambassador Ray, I want you to know that what I feel, anyways, is that you've been doing a lot of work lately. I think you're lifting a heavy load.
Thank you.
And you make me feel to be proud to be a Canadian.
Thank you very much. What's the question?
My question is quick. So, other than a resource problem with Canada, and the fact that the government is disheveled, is there anything else standing in the way of Canada being in a position to help more with Haiti?
So, Peter, I'm sorry, Ambassador Ray, go ahead.
No, you go, Ian.
Well, I was just going to say to Peter, what would you like to see?
I would like to see boots on the ground.
Okay, all right, Ambassador Ray?
Well, I hear you. We do have, it's not true to say we don't have any boots on the ground. We do have police officers that are providing direct assistance to the HNP. We do have police officers who are providing direct assistance to the UN, which also has room for some more people coming in on the policing side. We are doing a lot of prep for training in Jamaica because we're going to be training a lot of the Caribbean countries that are going in. I think the underlying sense of the government, and I don't think it's about being disheveled, if I may say so at all, I really think it's about trying to figure out how do we make a mission that's actually got a better chance of succeeding than some of the previous ones that we've had, and what can really constructive role can Canada play over the long term in trying to build up Haitian institutions. In the past, countries with the UN have tended to go in, and this goes right back to the 1990s and also another round of assistance that happened in after the terrible earthquake in 2010. And in each case, once they left, there was really no strengthening of the institutions that were left behind. So we see this focus as being one of providing direct assistance to the Haitian National Police, which has, you know, some strengths, and it also does not have enough resources. But, you know, we're continuing to talk about with the UN and with our other partners how we can make this mission work. We all want to make the multinational force work, and we also want to make whatever assistance we provide to Haiti work as best as we can. And that's what we're, that's what we've been trying to do, and that's what we're trying to do now. But I'm listening to what you're saying.
Hey, my name's Jamie Poisson, and I'm the host of Front Burner. It's the CBC's daily news podcast. And every day, we're discussing the big events and fault lines shaping Canada and the world. Politics, economics, social movements, you name it. Sometimes we even talk about really fun stuff, like the enduring relevance of Lord of the Rings. You can hear Front Burner on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been to a few, visited a few of Canada's embassies around the world. I've not been to one during a time like, you know, what's happening now in Haiti. How safe and secure is the embassy itself?
The mission is safe. I mean, it's as safe as you can be. We have the mission itself has protection. I mean, we have Canadian police and military providing assistance. We also have some protection from the HNP itself, as do all of the embassies that are still going. There's a lot of fencing around, and it's difficult for people to get in through the gates. So there's some protection and security. But I want to assure Canadians that if there's ever a sense that this isn't going to work anymore, that we would take the steps necessary to make sure people are protected. But we also, I think it's important that there's just a big job to be done in Haiti, and it's important that we continue to work through it.
We're getting lots of calls. Let's go to Robert Liddington, who's in Saskatoon. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
And what's your question for Ambassador Ray?
Well, Ambassador Ray, I went on a volunteer with a volunteer group in the late 90s, and build a shelter and do some badly needed renovations on the hospital in an area about 2 hours north of Port-au-Prince. And I noticed quite vividly the amount of poverty in that country. And I also became aware of a debt that Haiti was paying to France. And I was wondering if you could, I don't doubt at all that the uprisings that are happening now are partly due to the poverty in the country. And I was wondering if you could comment on that debt. Does it still exist? And how can things be amended so that Haiti gets to keep more money in their nation? And I'll hang up to listen.
Ambassador?
Well, thank you, Robert. First of all, Haiti is extremely poor. It's the poorest country in the Americas, and it's one of the poorest countries in the world in terms of per capita income. The most important source of revenue for Haitians at the moment is what we call remittances, which is the money that family members send into the country to help people who are still living and working in Haiti. There is no longer a debt being paid to France. That was resolved a long time ago. But the fact is that people have long memories. And the history of Haiti is very interesting. It was essentially a slave colony of France, people working in sugar plantations and so on. Around the time of the American and later the French Revolution, there was a revolutionary movement in Haiti that was led by slaves and former slaves. And so Haiti became the first independent black republic in the world. And that was an incredible breakthrough and achievement. But when Napoleon tried to take it over again. He didn't succeed, but he then said, okay, but you're going to have to pay, and which was an incredible, when you think about it, how just appalling it is, said, you've got to pay us back for having been your colonial masters. And so for a long time, yes, Haiti, throughout the 19th century and early 20th century, Haiti had a very long debt. The history of Haiti is fascinating. I've been reading more and more about it as time goes on. It is an amazingly creative, brave, courageous country, but it has been dealing with tremendous poverty. And I think, frankly, the poverty today is really the product of an economic and political elite that, frankly, doesn't have much loyalty to the country and that has taken as much money out of the country as it possibly can. There's a lot of Haitian wealth in Miami. There's a lot of Haitian wealth in New York. And frankly, there's some in Montreal and in Canada. And one of the things we've been trying to do in the policies that Mr. Trudeau has been encouraging is to really look at how we can apply sanctions, how we can keep pushing back on the Haitian elite, saying this country, if it's going to turn around, it's going to require your leadership, your engagement, and your willingness to establish a more viable and less corrupt democracy. And that's something which we've really made very, very clear. And our ambassadors over the last several years have given us a lot of good advice as to how we can do that. Mm-hmm. But that's perhaps a long answer to your question. But I think I would really strongly urge you to Google this question of the French debt. And also, there's an excellent article by a Canadian journalist and others, Catherine Porter, in the New York Times a couple of years ago. And you can get a hold of that on the internet, I'm sure, because it's a very complete analysis of what that debt structure was all about and how much money was sucked out of out of Haiti under French rule and later on. And it's quite a story.
It is all very interesting, and I learned a lot just in that answer. We have 3 minutes left, Ambassador Ray, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask a couple of questions that our callers had, but just to speed this up, because I want to get these in before we go. Diane Doan is in Halifax, and her question to you, and you mentioned the earthquake in Haiti. Here's her question. Did the earthquake in Haiti signal a downhill shift in the country, which ended up causing what we're seeing going on today?
Dramatically. 150,000 people killed in about 30 seconds. Think about that. A third of the whole public sector of the government destroyed. I was actually in Haiti about 2 weeks after the earthquake, and it was devastating. And I think we've all underestimated the degree to which that earthquake in the center of Port-au-Prince really was a truly devastating event. And nature is not Haiti's friend at the moment. It has other earthquakes in the south recently, hurricanes on a regular basis. It's really tough. But all those factors have contributed to this, what you call the downward turn, which Haiti has been on. We hope to turn it around.
We have a minute and a half now. David Sims in Brighton, Ontario, wants to ask this question. What's the best way Canadians can help Haiti?
Well, I think as individuals, the best way you can help is to give money, frankly, at this point. I think you can choose the charity of your choice that has a record of providing assistance. The Canadian Red Cross is always a valued partner, but there are many others, and I don't want to be acute. UNICEF, you can give to UNICEF through Canada is a good way of helping kids. Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, is a tremendously good charity and really gives a lot of money back to where they are. There's a lot of ways in which you can help. And also, I think trying to overcome some of the apathy in our country and elsewhere about, well, it's a hopeless case. There's nothing we can do. I don't want to be accused of interfering in anyone else's politics, but there are no hopeless cases. And we're all human. And we need to understand that this is about our self-interest, because having a massively insecure situation just south of us is not a great thing, not a great idea. But more importantly, it's the solidarity that we owe one another and how we can help to respond in a humanitarian way. And that's what we always do at our best in Canada. And I hope that people will keep contributing.
Well, Bob Rae, as I said, you have a very impressive resume. Your current job, the reason that we asked you to speak to us today is that you're Canada's ambassador to the United Nations. We're delighted that you took up our invitation and appreciate the half hour you've given us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian. It's good to be with you.
That was a portion of Cross Country Checkup's AMA about Haiti with Bob Rae, Canada's ambassador to the United Nations. If you'd like to listen to yesterday's full two-hour edition of Cross Country Checkup, you can stream the podcast on the CBC Listen app. And if you'd like to share comments or appear on a future show, go to cbc.ca/aircheck. I'm Ian Hanna-Manson. Thanks for listening. The next live edition of Checkup airs on CBC Radio, CBC News Network, and CBC News Explore next Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.